For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Unlike you, I am Graham Hunter. This is The Big Interview. And for this episode in our long-running series, our guest is Boudewijn Zenden. Bolo, do you know why he's called Bolo? You don't. You will soon. Bolo was a star for the great Dutch team that went to the semi-finals of successive tournaments, the World Cup in 98 and the Euros in 2000. He was a star for PSV and Barcelona, and you watched him in the Premier League for Chelsea, Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough fans, how much do you love Bolo Zenden, Liverpool and Sunderland? In this first section of the interview with Bolo Zenden, we explore the other side of his sporting persona. He's a black belt judoka, has been since he was 14. I wondered, how did the concepts of judo, how did the disciplines of judo blend into his footballing career and his mentality? His answer's good. One of my favourite things about these interviews is the opportunity to ask world-class footballers to break down the specifics of their position and how they interpreted it. Our guest today, this smart, articulate, storytelling Dutchman, does it brilliantly, I think. You judge for yourself, but it's worthwhile a listen, I promise you. So, here comes Boudewijn Zenden, with the ball at his feet, black belt wrapped around his waist, poised to take on his right back, so keep your eye on the ball. Big interview, listeners, we have a treat today. 6 years we've been going, nearly 24 million listens, some sensational guests, and today we have another one because this is a man who lit up football pitches with ingenuity and wit and pace and skill, and is bringing those elements now to a coaching career at PSV Eindhoven. His name is Boudewijn Zenden, also known as Bolo. Boudewijn, welcome first of all to the Big Interview, and thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We are only a couple of weeks past being in Zwolle with Japstam, when we found out that Jap's first name is not Jap whatsoever. And I've never known, and I'm sorry to ask you something you've been asked a dozen times before, but where does Bolo come from, please?
It's a quick story short. My brother was into skateboarding, and they gave each other nicknames. As soon as I crossed the border, Boudewijn is a very difficult name to pronounce. So when we were on holidays, my brother said, why don't you call yourself differently, like as in Bolo? So I did, but then I came back to PSV And there was a certain player called Ronaldo who picked up the story and from then on called me Bolo. So when I first entered the dressing room with PSV, from the youth academy up to the professionals, I started calling myself Bolo more as a nickname. But as I said, it stuck to me. And as soon as I crossed the border to play, for example, in Barcelona, I didn't even bother explaining my name. So it was Bolo. And it stayed all the way through my career. So there's a lot of people that actually only know me as Bolo and not even by my real name.
Let's pay respect to your judoka parents and then complete the circle by saying, what does Budewijn mean, come from? It's a kind of beautiful name, and if names that are difficult to pronounce shouldn't be forgotten altogether.
No, it's difficult to pronounce. And back in the days, you had the king of Belgium was called Baudouin. And then in French, it would probably be Boudouin. And in Italian, it would probably be Balduino. So the proper Dutch pronunciation is rather difficult. So as soon as you cross the borders, there's a different ways to pronounce it, or at least... for me, if your name is Baudouin, then Balduino is not exactly the same. Boudouin is nothing like Baudouin. So then, especially on the pitch, Bolo works much better, much quicker.
You're sitting there with two stars on your training kit because PSV or PSV, I suppose it is in Dutch, I'm guessing, won the Europa League in the 70s, I think, but won the European Cup as well. You're talking to a man who loves... the only club in Scotland with two stars, two UEFA stars, and it's neither of the ugly sisters. It's Aberdeen, who have many beautiful Dutch footballers, principally Theo Snelders and Theo ten Cat playing for us. When you come to a two-star club, as you did, as a real youngster, and okay, you move into a squad where Ronaldo is a star, but there are hard-nosed, successful, demanding footballers around you. Vouchers would be an example. When you come as a kid to PSV Eindhoven, what are the values that they tried to teach you? What was the experience, even before trying to force Hoekstra out of a place to be the wide man in that team? What's Eindhoven like?
Well, to be honest, Eindhoven itself, as a PSV as a club, is, a warm club, a club which is a bit... gives you the family feeling. You do have to perform, but that's not the only thing, you know, they do take care of you. At times then, for that reason, it's not very business-like, but still you have to perform. But it's a bit of a cozy club where, for example, they try to organize stuff for the family, they try to take care of you, not just yourself, but also the family. Let's say they try to organize a get-together for the wives, you know, it's like... they try to integrate everybody. And over the years, PSV has also always had a relationship with South Americans. And I think the South Americans in general are warm people. So they do well when they come to Eindhoven because we try to offer them that warm feeling. But when I was a 17-year-old and I came first into the dressing room, it wasn't easy, of course, because being a youngster, you have to earn your stripes. Not the stars, but the stripes. And it was a transitional period where the club needed to get, I don't want to say get rid of, but they needed to clean up the dressing room a bit with the more experienced players and freshen it up from the bottom with some youngsters. And that always brings a bit of friction within the squad. So I remember when first I joined, it wasn't that easy. But then I guess if you bring something to the table, then you're more likely to be accepted.
Growing up in Maastricht, how conscious were you of the European final in 1988? And some of our listeners will know it intimately because we have really football fanatics following us and listening to us, and some won't because we have younger listeners. But Van Breukelen, Gerrits, Nielsen, Koeman, Heinze, Søren Lerby, Van Aarle, Gerard Vandenberg, Linskens, Wim Kieft, Aberdeen legend Hans Hillhouse, coached by Hiddink, beating Benfica. Were you old enough to have been aware of that European final and what it meant for Dutch football?
Yeah, I think I was about 11 years old. So I did I was into the football, of course, and I was into PSV as well. I already had a bit of a fling with PSV at the time. I joined PSV when I was 13, actually. But when I was about 11, I started joining PSV on, for example, an international tournament, or I was invited to play a game with them, a friendly. So I was already, let's say at that time, I was already a little bit on the radar. What also happened in that year, the 88, obviously the Dutch also won the European championship in Germany against Russia.
USSR, yeah, after quite an interesting semi-final against the old enemies, Germany.
Yes, of course. So I was aware of everything that happened there. I know the actual path or the track that you have to make to get to the final is slightly different than these days. It's funny to see that, for example, also now we're actually at the moment in a phase of the season where with PSV we still play for 3 trophies, and we've already had 48 games, and there's still a possible 13 to play, minimum 10 and could be 13. So it's totally different than back in the 80s when a tournament like that was a little bit shorter than nowadays.
You came into a squad, and you won't find it difficult to anticipate we're coming back to Ronaldo Nazario, who film company I work with, we produced a television series called El Presidente, following his rule at Valladolid, and we're a third of the way through a feature film with him, where his partners, our company is called Zoom. He's been so generous to us, and we're making a film with Ronaldo about the years 97-98 through the disastrous knee injuries to winning the World Cup in Japan. The first third of it is done, and he's a marvellous man. But putting Ronaldo to one side for a second, when you're coming through into the team and breaking in, did I call it correctly that Hoekstra was one of the players you had to displace? Who helped you? Who was the cynical guy between Mitchell van der Gaag, Vaterhuis, Stanley Valks, famous Newman, Meyer, and what kind of coach was Kees Rijvers?
To be honest, Peter Hoekstra was not a cynical one, because he was actually, I think, 3 years older than me, and he was waiting to make the step into the first team as a regular starter. But then this younger kid came along and was aiming for the same position. So that was slightly different. To be honest, there was a moment where Ajax had a problem where Mark Overmars got injured, and they needed a left winger, and they actually came to PSV to try and see if they could get me to move to Amsterdam. But the club wasn't willing to, and in the end, Peter Hoekstra left for Amsterdam, and I stayed. So you could see it both ways. Either PSV was probably more convinced, and then in the other end, they could still sell one of the other talents to Ajax. Which wasn't obviously not a normal situation to buy a talent from one team to the other, especially PSV and Ajax, or either Feyenoord. So yeah, I don't say I burst onto the scene, but I did well in the youth leagues, and I was always scoring goals. And then I came to the first team, and I had to earn my way into the team, because in my first year, Ademos was the manager. He actually took me from the youth into the first team. Then after a few months, he got relieved of his duties. And then all of a sudden we had Kees Rijvers, who was only there for a short term, maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks maximum, because Dick Advocaat was coming in January. And I think De Mos was left somewhere in November maybe. So they had to fill the gap up until Dick Advocaat came along. And Kees Rijvers was definitely a gentleman, someone from, I would call him at times maybe more a teacher type, someone who really was there to help you and move.
You smiled when you said his name. You smiled involuntarily.
Of course, because for me, he was maybe even like a granddad, you know what I mean? I was so young, and he was already at a certain age, and it was just impossible to be angry at this man or whatever. He was so calm. I don't want to make the comparison because I think it's not right. But as a maybe as a human, if you make a comparison on a human basis, maybe Bobby Robson had a bit similar. Like,
I understand what you mean. I understand.
Yeah,
he naturally generates warmth and affection, even if he's tough and professional. There's an extra warmth around the person.
Yeah,
strip away the ego and explain to our listeners what did young Bolo send him bring to the challenge to be a first teamer, particularly under Advocaat at PSV. And within that, I want to understand how much not judo helped you, but also the judo philosophy, rather than the individual things. Particularly, almost all martial arts have a belief, have a teaching, have a philosophy that's far beyond what you do on the mat. And most of them are very one-on-one. And I'm intrigued as to whether you think I'm talking rubbish or whether there's some fact in the one-on-one nature of... You didn't stay an out-and-out winger all your life, but being a wide left man is really what you're famous for. What did you bring to it and how did judo help you?
Well, first of all, I think judo is a very complete sport, and I think it's a sport that all the kids should do as a way of development. I would suggest from the age of 4 up until 12, that's already a very big range where you could train your physique and your motorique.
Your motor skills.
But I did it up until 16, 17. I got my black belt first then. I did competitions. Besides all those things, you're entirely right to say that it's an individual sport. So if you lose, I mean, you're the one to blame. But also if you go on the tatami, which is where you compete, you cannot hide. I mean, it's just you. So you have to do it. You can't step away from the one-on-one, the fight, the duel. And in the end, that's exactly the same when I entered the pitch as a winger. I was in a battle with my fullback and I wanted to beat him and I wanted to lure him into a position where I could take profit from. But it also learned you to stay calm and don't react in an aggressive way, or let's say always react with your mind and not just with
emotions.
Yeah, emotions. Put them aside and then make the right decisions. So that definitely helped me. Besides all other stuff that helps when you learn, for example, how to fall or break your fall, because sometimes people do get injured when they land inappropriate. Sometimes I still see it when a player gets tackled and he falls in a strange way. Someone who's done judo wouldn't fall that way. So I had a lot of profit from it. And it's definitely a sport that I would suggest for kids. Not just football, but any kind of sports that you want to do. It would be a good combination to do judo alongside it for a certain amount of time.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks. You're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Does it frustrate you as well as seeing, like, say, a player fall awkwardly? The variety of things that could be, if not conquered, changed in the modern footballer had they had the discipline of not just judo, but martial arts across the board tend to teach philosophy, calm, restraint. You're trying to do something quite physical and it's often one-on-one, but there is definitely a teaching, an idea. And I'd argue that probably affects behaviour in lots of different ways rather than just the one-on-one of the football pitch. Does that frustrate you now, particularly as a coach?
No, I think it also gives you... there's a certain respect in judo. So the respect for the a teacher, of course, but also the respect for the levels of skills, because you have your belt, you know, and you start with the white, the yellow, the orange, and so on. So it teaches you a lot of things, as in respect for yourself, for the opponent, and for maybe people in general. But nowadays, yeah, football is different. Society is different. I remember when I came on to the scene and I was in the dressing room with Hans van Breukelen, I shook his hand and I called him Sir and Mister. And he said, you know, what are you doing? I said, well, yeah, it's still Mr. van Breukelen, you know. And he's actually in the board now here.
He's one of your directors, right? Still to this day, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I still say this. And he says, yeah, you never change. I said, yeah, why should I? Why should I? But yeah, now the kids, they come onto the scene and they think they're all chippy chappies and they've made it. And it's also society where there's a lot of me, myself and I, you know. It's all socials is about me. It's not about anybody. It's of course, I was a product, but I was, in the end, you know, you were part of a team and you were part of a squad and you were one of many. But now a lot of times it's the individual within a team. So it's a totally different era than when I played. And I don't say it's wrong. I don't say it's right. I only say it's different. And as a manager, I think you have to deal much more with individuals nowadays than with the group. And of course, we also facilitate that, you know. So we train players individually. We take them apart where we work only with the strikers or only with defenders. We give them everything as personalized, from their weight training to their food, you know. So it's really everything is personalized. I'm sure that when you bought your first car, you could choose out of two colors. That was it. Now you can choose whatever. I mean, society is about choices. So that's the same now.
Our lovely sponsors have been with us for a long time. And Bet365 has sent us this question asking us to ask you to describe your art, by which let's separate the times when you played centrally and talk about Bolozen and the winger. And the idea of something you touched on, that you called him, I loved it, my fullback. When you thought about, when I have the ball at my feet and I'm against my right back, how much distance did you want to have between you before you dropped a shoulder or sold him an idea that was false? Or what did you want to see in his balance, your balance? Take us into that little corridor of me v you.
There's a lot of corridors in there. In general, I played especially in the beginning only as a left winger. Nowadays, even after that, I played in so many different positions. I was very versatile, which was a big advantage at times. And sometimes I think maybe it's not an advantage, because sometimes you're better, the best at something than good at everything. You know what I mean? So if a manager needs to make a choice, then he'll probably go for the best one in that position and not the one that can do the job as well. But to go back to that, yeah, I had a lot of pace. I was very pacey, and I knew it was a weapon that is hard to defend. So I had, especially at PSV, I had a very good understanding with the midfielder, and so my left midfielder and my left back, which was actually Philippe Cocu and Arthur Newman. And we had at times I call it a golden triangle, where you understand each other without talking. We knew exactly what we wanted to do. We knew exactly what was going to happen. And that way, we were really tough to stop, which means that I knew, for example, if Newman would play Cocu in, that he would play me first touch in the back of the defender. Or if Newman would take the ball from the center back, have one touch, have a look at me, I would always make the counter movement where I would step into the ball, because a lot of defenders were really eager to put pressure on you. So I would make one step to the ball and then go deep, because I knew he was going to just chip it in behind, and I was a liftoff. I was gone and they would never see me again. So that was definitely one of my strengths. So if you say, would you like to be close to your defender? Yes, I loved it when they were really eager to step on my toes, because then I knew it was slightly easier to lure into my counter movements, if you want to call it. And other than that, if you're a winger and you get the ball and you see the opportunity of a one-on-one, then you would never let it go. Because now sometimes I still train with the forwards here, and sometimes you see that a player gets a ball and he's stalling a bit and he's waiting, and then all of a sudden I see the center back, you know, covering, and then I also see a midfielder covering. I'm thinking, why would you wait? Why? You have a chance to go one-on-one, so just do it. You know, this is your opportunity. If you're a winger and you don't want to go one-on-one, then you might as well just play somewhere else. The good thing, of course, is that you can make as many mistakes as you as you want, because the moment that you're successful, that's in the end what people will remember. Now, later on, when I also played as a defender, that was obviously the other way around.
No mistakes. I sat yesterday listening to a briefing. It wasn't a press conference, and so I used the words carefully, but Xavi Hernandez is the Barcelona manager, and Xavi took a group of 9 or 10 of us in, just off the record, to brief us about what he was trying to do. And in one of the sections, he said that he in teaching the players individually, he often marks them in one-on-one sessions. And he'll get Pedri, for example, in the midfield, and it'll be 90% is okay and 10% is KO. But with Ousmane Dembele, who resembles a little bit what you were talking about there as the wide man and when to go, and look at what he did in the Clásico when he took on Nacho and beat him and sent it for Aubameyang. He said, with Ousmane, it's not 90% KO, it's 90% chaos and 10% okay. But that 10% wins you the game, he said. Which corresponds with what you're saying about, like, wingers go into situations where they'll be robbed, where it won't work, and you must go, and you must go again, and you must never lose the belief that you're doing the right thing and that you will beat your fullback. And then if the cross makes a goal, it's worth all the other problems and all the other times that the crowd goes, oh, because once they'll go, yes.
No. I obviously see where you're coming from, and it also reminds me of a moment where actually there at Barca, Rivaldo was playing as a winger, and he scored so many goals and so many assists. And when he won the Golden Ball, he said, I don't want to play in the wing no more. I want to play as a number 10. And that was when a little bit of trouble started.
With Van Gaal.
Yeah. Because Van Gaal said, now you look at it as a manager. And of course, as a fan, you'd say, okay, why would you put the best player in the world on the bench? You know, because then he said, okay, if you don't want to play, then come and sit next to me. He said, if I put him as a 10, he will score as many goals as a winger, but he'll also lose as many balls as a winger. And my team was in big trouble if I start losing the ball in down the middle. So he said, for that reason, I think, that he thought, okay, I do accept the collateral damage, but only on the side, not in the middle. And that also gives you a certain freedom on the side. So It's not like you can do everything wrong and because nowadays I think also football has been as got much more complex, much more. You definitely need everybody to be on the same page, same level, in order to make certain things work.
I guess few people have ever compared Louis van Gaal and George Graham at Arsenal, but I'm about to, because George Graham's doctrine at Arsenal, when he was such a successful coach of a defensive team, he always told his fullbacks, show your wide man inside. And there were two reasons. Show them inside, and it's more crowded there. There's more chance of a colleague helping you. But also, you show them inside and you rob them there. It's the same as your Van Gaal argument about, if we have the ball back there, this is a really good place where you have choices about how to punish the other side when they're a little bit ragged in their setup because they've lost the ball.
Yeah, but now we get into a different discussion, because back in the days, a left-footed player would play as a left wing and a right-footed on the right. Nowadays, the other way around, because they really want to go inside, and you see them either having a shot, but you know, into the far post. Now a lot what you also see is, well, you've been there long enough. How many times did Messi cross the ball to the fullback Alba when he came in? You know, the in-swinging cross. You see that so often now as well. It's a big weapon. It's a big danger. And of course, we just tapped on the goal that Aubameyang scored on the cross from Dembele, which was a little bit like a little bit old school.
Of course, it was old school. You go outside your man, you cross from the wide, and it's like from 20 years ago.
Simple ABC. And nowadays, it's all, you know, coming back in, pulling it back, and putting it over, crossing it in.
Blame Arjen Robben for that, because that was Arjen's fantastic trick. He was maybe the best has been at that.
Yeah, he did, and he also developed something that made it even more difficult to defend. Because as I look at in detail, I don't know if you, not sure if you understand what I mean. That you can get at someone straight and try to pass him in a straight line. So if the defender is in front of you, you're most likely to open up the angle. So you have to go further wide in order to stay away from the defender. What Robin did in many times is even worse, where he created an angle where he actually went backwards. So the defender would never be able to get him. And then he would shoot, let's say... He would nearly shoot with his back against the goal. And that was even more difficult to defend. Instead of going forwards, he cut slightly backwards and then had a shot in the far corner.
But it's so difficult to defend, but technically still also more difficult for him to do it, which makes him so special. It's clever because he's buying himself a little bit more room, making it harder for his opponent or even opponent coming towards him also. But it's a message about how talented Robin was, I guess. Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Backpage. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof. Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.